Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 577 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I'm going to talk a little bit about Inherit the Wind at Nashville Repertory Theater, and I'm going to preview a little bit of our upcoming coverage of the 42nd annual Humana Festival of New American Plays. And we're going to get into that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages. Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
Bad credit? No credit? High interest credit cards? Don't work from home. Working from home is for suckers. Go out there with headshot in hand. Audition. Book gigs. It'll be time well spent. At least you'll be paying the rent.
Here's how.
All right, guys. So here we are. We've been kind of haphazard for the last couple weeks about when we get an episode out. And it's been a couple weeks and in between. And then when it's been in between the episodes, and when you've gotten an episode, it's been one of the Idea Summer Rep type episodes because of the holidays and everything at this time of year. The reason being is that I've been, for the last 3.5 weeks or so, been working, you know, paid actor, kind of doing a gig, so that's been fun. But I've been playing Meeker in Nashville Repertory Theater's production of Inherit the Wind, which is in collaboration with the theater department of Lipscomb University here in town. So I've been very busy, so that's why I haven't been slotting out an episode a week for the last couple of weeks. So I do apologize for that. But I do have a good excuse. Inherit the Wind is kind of a loose-based play on the Scopes monkey trial that happened here in Tennessee. And it deals with the idea of divine creation versus evolution. We do have characters that are based on the actual people in the real story, the real case. However, it is not a documentary. It is an artistic interpretation. It is an interpretation that was written in the 50s that, again, kind of spoke, they used the Scopes trial to really address the idea of free thought and free thinking and to really fight against kind of the witch hunt of the anti-communist sort of red scare of the early 50s. And so they used that as kind of a symbol for this whole Scopes monkey trial thing. So it's, again, it is somewhat based on the actual event. However, again, like I said, it's not a documentary of the actual event. And I didn't know this till we started working on this play, that the Scopes monkey trial was not even that sort of contentious. From research that we found from what our dramaturgists have brought up, a lot of this was preordained, let's kind of have this trial here in Dayton, Tennessee. We want to promote the town. It really was about kind of trying to give Dayton a storyline and give Dayton a push as far as notoriety and profitability and all that sort of thing. So I think the story is like they were looking for some guy to assert the anti-evolution law and challenge it in court. And they agreed, the ACLU, agreed to pay for the court costs. And they kind of had this trumped up, case. And it's all kind of really was a publicity stunt, and it only sort of backfired because people don't remember Dayton, Tennessee as much anymore. All that's to say is that kind of fuels the characters in Inherit the Wind. Again, we're not as, they're not as so cynical as trying to profit from, now don't get me wrong, the characters are there to sell hot dogs, to sell housing, to sell monkey puppets and that sort of thing, but it they seem less cynical than maybe what their real life counterparts were doing at the time. We have a cast of like 27. I mean, it's a huge cast. We have a mixture of professional actors. Then we, of course, because it's a Lipscomb University Theater Department collaboration, we have Lipscomb students. And then we also have two younger actors in their early teens, preteen. No, they're both teens, I guess, by this point. But they're teenagers, clearly, and they're not Lipscomb students. But, you know, so we have kind of kids, young adults, and the professional actors all kind of mixed together. And kudos to Renee Copeland for making the mix incredible. And I only say that, and I don't say that only because I'm in it. I don't mean it that way. I just mean that the professionals, we've got, Chip Arnold, who's playing Matthew Harrison Brady, who's the religious lawyer. We have Brian Webb Russell, who's playing the evolutionist lawyer, Henry Drummond. We've got, Sam Whited, who's playing the judge, Brett Cantrell, who's the mayor, myself as Meeker, Jacob York in from Atlanta, playing the newspaper man, E.K. Hornbeck. We've got Rebecca Durham, who's Mrs. Krebs. We've got Derek Whitaker, who's George Bannister. We kind of have a great mix of people playing, we've got Matthew Carlton playing Reverend Brown. I don't want to leave, problem when you start listing names is you're going to leave somebody out, and I apologize if I do. But all that's to say, we've got those professionals. We've got, I'm not going to go through all the college kids because I won't remember everybody's name, and I don't want to leave anybody out. But we have Scott Patrick Wilson and Emily Meinerding, who are playing Rachel and Bert Cates. We've got the townspeople, who are made up primarily of college kids. And each one of them has their own sort of defined character, their own sort of defined moment in the play. They each have a moment to shine. The script is really good about that. It's kind of having this, giving each kind of little character a little chance, a little vignette, a little something to kind of peek out of, above the cacophony of the play and have his or her moment. It's really, really special. As far as the cast is going, I have to say from my personal record here, it has been an absolute joy to work on this show. I finally get to work with Chip. I've never worked with Chip before. And what a treat. And what a treat. What a treat to meet and get to know Matt Carlton and Chip Arnold and work again with old friends, Derek Whitaker, Rebecca Durham, Brett Cantrell, Jacob York. Just getting to blend in with the cast. I think it works really well because we are all, have at some point worked with one another and we are sort of a big family anyway. And it just, I think it shows in the warmth of the characters, and the willingness to work for one another. And then of course you bring in the college kids who are very well groomed. So kudos to the Lipscomb University Theater Department faculty. Kudos to Becky Baker who runs the show over there, I guess. And, I mean, I can't say enough about how great and how committed and how professional the kids have been. And even the younger kids, the teenagers, have done, you know, are spot on and create individual interesting characters to watch and to see them and see their path as they move forward. And I think it's just a beautiful, beautifully strong show as far as the acting goes. And that does not even bring into account the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful set of Gary C. Hoff. The set is just incredible and incredible detailed, and it looks like the town and has elements from the courtroom in Dayton, and it's just amazing to look at. June Kingsbury, who's our costume designer, had an affiliation with the rep, but is now, I think, the costume design person over at Lipscomb. So her Lipscomb students helped to develop our costumes. They mesh really well with one another and work off one another, work in the color palettes of the set and the lights by Philip Frank, and sound by Kyle Odom. It's just, this is one of those productions where I think everything works. Like you can have a really good production sometimes and you get there and the set's not quite right, or the lights are too stylized, or the music is too loud, or in the wrong tone, or, you know, whatever. And there's just these little bitty things that keep good shows from being great shows. I think we don't have that problem here with Inherit the Wind. I think we have a strong cast. We have a very, very strong set design, very clear costume design, very clear lights, very awesome sound, backed with live sound by us humming and singing and that sort of thing. It just creates this amazing world that is absolutely fascinating to watch and to behold and to be part of, because we really strive to bring the audience into the world of the play and not work the... We still sort of have a fourth wall between us, but it's a very thin barrier, if it is there at all. We try to bring everybody in, encapsulate the audience, if you will. And again, that's through Renee's vision and direction and design elements and all that sort of stuff. So I can't say enough how much you should see this show if you're in the Nashville area, just because it is a tour de force by everybody. Just a couple of sidebars and make it interesting from my perspective. One of my things is I play Meeker the bailiff, and I have a decent scene in the beginning, and then I'm kind of a functionary of the court and the court process as we go through the play. But I've decided to my physical activity to keep myself in the world is that my Meeker chews tobacco, and so he has his little spit cup, and so I don't personally as an actor chew tobacco. So it was kind of fun to find out, okay, well, what's going to assimilate tobacco without being tobacco? And we've kind of come upon this mixture of wintergreen gum and some prunes to give the expectorant a tobacco hue, if you will. But it's for the way the stage is set up. It's kind of in a thrust stage setup they have in the Johnson Theater, so the audience is kind of wrapped around the side of the set. My side gets full view of my spitting prowess or lack thereof in my little cup, and it's very funny. The first day we opened, did my, you know, my tobacco spitting stuff, and I heard someone kind of under their breath kind of giggle with glee, like, ooh, he's spitting. And then our first high school kid show, we did Tuesday afternoon, first spit out, I heard someone say, that's effing disgusting. So it's kind of neat to see those reactions. You know, it's just, I never thought I'd put so much thought into fake tobacco, but there you are. And, it, you know, keeps me engaged in the play, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of a neat little fun sidebar, I guess, for me. The other thing that I really like, and this is, it has less to do with the play and more to do with the people in it. Again, I said earlier, it's the first time I worked with Chip Arnold. I am very thankful for Renee to give me the opportunity to work with Chip. I think he's fantastic. He's warm and gracious and welcoming and challenging, and just a joy to watch him work and try to glean something and add it to your own work. But what's really cool, of course, is to also have Brian in the room and have Matt in the room and Sam light it in the room and see them work together and see them reminisce. I can't tell you how, just as a person who does a podcast, who does kind of documentary theater podcast stuff, it has been really cool to listen to all the collected Nashville stories that those guys have been sharing back and forth. It's been pretty awesome. So please, I'm going to end the rambling here by saying, come see the show. Tickets are still available. We run through April 21st, NashvilleRep.org. You can find your ticket information there. You can go through TPAC, find your ticket information there. Of course, I will have links to the show notes page on this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
All right, so that is it. I'd like to thank you guys for dealing with me as I kind of ramble through a little bit about Inherit the Wind. Again, it is a production that I'm very proud of. I'm proud of the work. I'm proud of the ability that I have to work with such wonderful people. It's been a real treat. The cast is strong. The show is strong. The sets, the costume, everything is gorgeous. By far, I'm really, really, really proud of this production, and I hope all of those in the Nashville area, all the IDSers in the Nashville area that want to see the show, do see the show, because it is a truly special evening of theater, and I don't often say that, and I know it sounds kind of cheesy if I'm involved in it saying that, but please, trust me on this one. It's a good piece of theater. So. Ticket information that I talked about earlier will be found on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Then please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282. Or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com. Or follow the show on Twitter at inexplicableds, at capital I, inexplicable, capital D, capital S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So next week, we're going to start our coverage of the Humana Festival of New American Plays, the 42nd, hosted again, as always, by Actors Theatre of Louisville. Because I was being meeker and working and doing wonderful things and working with wonderful people in Inherit the Wind, I was unable to attend this year's festival. But the IDS rolls on. So co-founder T. Quillen and IDS's first intern, our favorite by far, don't tell the others, Mark Cabus, joined forces and became my intrepid roving band of reporters. So next week kicks off what they their response and their interviews with what they saw and what they heard and what they liked and who they talked to and that sort of thing. So next week starts off their coverage of the 42nd Annual Humana Festival of New American Plays. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality wave files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's M-A-G-N-A-T-U-N-E. Magnatune. We are not evil.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry.
No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Alternative Media.